I didn't owe a penny. Thank you, Sam Landis. Many of you have IRS problems, and you've spent thousands with non-lawyer tax resolution firms. Do yourself a favor. Call Sam Landis for a free consultation. Trust me, Sam Landis is the best. Sam saved my life. Call Sam at 800-WE-HELP-YOU with the letter U. That's toll-free, 800-WE-HELP-YOU with the letter U. 800-WE-HELP-YOU.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
Good afternoon. The weather today is going to be sunny with a high near 56. West winds around 18 miles an hour with gusts as high as 30. And tonight, it's going to be mostly clear with a low around 38. Southwest winds 8 to 10 miles an hour with gusts as high as 21 miles per hour. Tuesday will be sunny with a high near 57, west winds 6 to 14 miles an hour. Tuesday night will be mostly clear with a low around 34, west winds around 6 miles per hour, becoming calm in the evening. Wednesday will be a slight chance of showers after 1 o'clock in the afternoon, but it'll be partly sunny with a high near 53 and calm winds. Wednesday night, chance of showers mainly after 7 o'clock at night and mostly cloudy with a low around 45. The chance of precipitation is about 40%. And again, Thursday, chance of showers, mostly cloudy, with a high near 67. And Thursday night will be mostly cloudy with a low around 52. And who knows how far? They can't predict that far ahead, in my opinion. So I'm not going to give you Fridays.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Good afternoon and welcome to the award-winning radio show, Mental Health Matters. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and my co-host is Tracy Ivey. And this is the hour for NAMI, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we have no paid staff, we have no office, we work out of our houses, use our own phones, that sort of thing. And what we try to do is we try to help people who either have a mental health issue and need assistance in finding help, or families who have someone in their family who has a mental health issue, or has a friend or somebody they work with, or a distant relative who has a mental health issue. And we try to help the families feel like what the person that they care about is going through. And we do this in various ways. We have a support group that meets once a month, the third Thursday of every month in Flemington at 52 East Main Street. And it starts at 7 o'clock, and you don't have to register or anything. You just come. You don't have to be a member of NAMI either. And everything is totally confidential. And we also do it by classes. We have what they call a family-to-family class, which is a 12-week course. In fact, one of them is going on now. And that tries to cover medication, side effects, what to do, what not to do, what not to say in certain circumstances. And it tries to get the person taking the class to feel what it's like to be the person with the illness. We also have what they call a basics course. And basics is for families who have children under the age of 18 who are experiencing mental health issues. Everything we do is free. There is no charge. There's no cost for the information we give out. There's no charge for anything. And if you want some more information or you have a question, and you can feel free to call us, it's 908-284-0500. We don't man the phone 24/7, but we do have someone that checks it at least twice a day, and we promise you we will get back to you just as soon as possible. And the number again is 908-284-0500.
Hi, this is Tracy Ivey, and we're very pleased today to have Denny Whalen with us as a guest. Denny is a marriage and family therapist as well as a play therapist who has had a private practice in Pennsylvania for 25 years. She has a master's degree in psychology and has had further training with a licensed play therapist. She is also an RN with a visiting nurse and hospice background. And one more thing, she also worked with a New Jersey organization that served battered women. Quite a background, Denny. Let's start right in. Why did you decide to become a therapist?
Well, hi, Tracy. It's really nice to be a part of your program.
Thank you.
I think that although I was really happy being a nurse, I think that my experiences with hospice clients was very instrumental, as well as my experience working with battered women. And maybe most of all, I was raising two boys at the time, the younger of which had a lot of behavioral difficulties. And it was hard to get him help that seemed effective. And it seemed to me as I went along trying to figure that out that it shouldn't have to be that hard. And I kind of evolved from wanting to continue as a nurse, which I did enjoy, to becoming a therapist and being more involved in listening.
Hi, Denny. This is Larry.
Hi, Larry.
How are you?
Good.
Welcome to our show. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you very much.
I got to ask, when you worked with the battered women, was that with Safe and Hunterton, or?
It was in Flemington with Women's Crisis Services.
Okay.
Maybe you're connected
right
to them, or maybe you were.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm very familiar with it. Yes. That was very interesting because, people in this county, from my experience, both with mental health and with NAMI and the mental health issues and so on and so forth, we don't have people that are battered. Well, yeah, you do. It's just like they say, we don't have people that are homeless, but yeah, we do too, So I was just curious, which organization you worked with.
Uh-huh.
I'll give it back to Tracy.
Okay.
So you've really seen already people at all ages and walks of life. Let's talk about, is your practice equally divided between children and adults?
I think it's about a 50-50 practice, 50% with children. Usually the youngest that I can do direct therapy with is about 4, and then I see kids up through the teen years, and I still consider them kids in their 20s when they're in school.
Okay, great.
I still consider mine, and they're way older than that.
Right. They're still your children.
Yeah, exactly. They're still my kids.
Right. In terms of just the issues that you deal with, let's say even a 4-year-old, mm-hmm. what are some issues that you deal with children?
Mm-hmm. Well, with a 4-year-old, you know that it's the parents who are calling me and saying they have an issue. Either they have an issue with the child or the preschool has an issue with the child. And usually it's an externalized behavioral issue. although sometimes parents will tell me my child is so anxious. But usually it's a behavioral issue, and I always consider that at that age a child is languaging his concerns through behavior. And so what I tried to do is develop a very good listening relationship with the child so that I'm in there interpreting what the child is trying to tell the world, but because of the behaviors, usually the response is more disciplinary.
Yeah, that's really an interesting approach on your part. I understand why the schools, I guess, are responding with the disciplinary, because they can't take the time out necessarily to do that, although I'm sure they could probably improve.
Right, and even the parents, because I don't think it's that they're... I'm a parent, too. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's that we're unwilling to take the time, but it's sometimes not really apparent what's going on, and sometimes having a neutral person in there to interpret and then to try to communicate is where the help lies.
Okay.
And a lot of times parents have tunnel vision, you know.
Sure.
And they don't see the whole picture because all they want to see is, you know, their child, you know.
Sure.
And which is understandable.
And you know, life is busy, and there are other kids involved.
Right,
so
right.
The issue gets clouded.
You know, it's ironic because you were talking about, you know, behaviorals of, like, you know, four-year-olds and stuff.
Larry, can I interrupt you 1 minute?
Sure.
Is it at all possible for you to be more...
louder?
Increase the volume for me?
Oh, sure.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Is that better?
Oh, that's much better.
Okay.
Thank you.
I gave a presentation a while back to some doctors and nurses, and after two doctors came up to me from different organizations, they weren't in the same practice, and they both said to me that they had children as young as three attempt suicide. And I said, what, three? And they said, well, they didn't realize, you know, they didn't know what suicide was at that age, but they were unhappy about, you know, their life or whatever, and they were trying to do this, you know, but they actually, you know, attempted it. And so I found it, you know, mind-boggling that at that age, you know, someone could do that. So if you're dealing with four-year-olds, that's, you know, kind of interesting, you know.
Yes, I've had kids come in to me at an early age being that desperate. And there is research that's been done that makes it pretty clear that early in life, kids began to feel very, very helpless and want to do something about it. If they feel the environment and their families aren't able to do anything to make their life better.
It's a shame, isn't it?
Oh, it is. But that's why I love the work I do.
Right. Let's talk about before you take on a child, mm-hmm. or even an adult, you have a phone chat with them. Is that for children and adults? And are there some people you don't take on as clients?
Good questions. I don't usually talk to the young children on the phone first.
No.
Although there's a thought. You know, I'll have to put that in my back recesses and give it some further thinking.
I think that was a Freudian slip.
I always have a conversation with the parent. Mm-hmm. And I want them to know where I'm coming from. I want to know where they're coming from, what they're looking for. We discuss practicalities. I'd like them to know what my fee structure is and whether or not that's acceptable and workable for them. I want them to know that it's really important that both parents, if there are two parents, are agreeable to the child coming in. I cannot see a child if one parent says, nope, I don't believe in it, I'm not going to do it, I don't give my permission. And I always want to involve the parents in a very close way. So even though I'll be seeing the child, I'll also be working with the parents. And yes, there are some situations that I'm not really well equipped to deal with. And I would say, although I'm skilled in and experienced in dealing with kids on the spectrum, I really don't have the kind of setup environmentally that kids do well in. It's too busy. So I usually refer out.
So just for anyone who's listening, when you say the spectrum, you're referring to the autism spectrum?
The autistic spectrum, correct. I am. Correct. Whether it's, okay. Well, Asperger's, I definitely do work with kids with Asperger's, but I'm talking about someone who's more fully autistic.
Right, okay.
This isn't the environment for them.
Okay, let's talk about your first visit with a child. You have a talking room and a playroom. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I credit the people that I learned play therapy from for that kind of setup. In the talking room, kids come in with their parents, ideally on a first visit with both parents, and then subsequently with at least one parent. And depending on the age of the child or the teenager, we spend anywhere from 10 to 15 to 20 minutes together reviewing what's been good in your life and what isn't so happy for you, or what are other people saying to you isn't so happy for them, either your parents or the school, and let's figure out what we can do together to come up with a plan that develops some strategies and tools to deal with that. And for young kids, I have a little actual toolkit that I open, and they always laugh because it's got screwdriver and a hammer in it, and I say, do you think this is the kind of toolbox I'm talking about? And they laugh and say no, and I said, you're right. And so every time that you come to see me, we'll be talking about what kinds of things you can take out of here and work on at home or at school that will make things better for you. And then we'll kind of check in with one another and see if those tools are working or if we need different tools in the toolbox. So obviously my language isn't quite so young if I'm working with a teenager, but it's the same basic principle. And after that amount of time, in the first visit, I asked the parents, no matter what the age of the child is, to come with me in the playroom. In the playroom, I have set up an arts and crafts table, and then the rest of the room is devoted to a series of what play therapists call miniatures. We would all call them little toys, or they're objects that represent our experience in the world, moon, stars, trains, cars, that kind of thing. And there's a dollhouse, and there's a sandbox. And the sandbox is an integral part of play therapy, and it's been in existence for over 100 years now. Started with the psychoanalysts in Britain, and involves a wet, what we call a sand tray, and then a dry sand tray. And kids and parents are invited to choose miniatures in the room and set up a story. I might be directive about what that story is, or, for example, in the first visit, I'll say to a parent, I'd really like you to tell us a story about something you really liked when you were your child's age. And then to the child I say, why don't you just look around and see what you like, and you can either tell us a real story or you can make up a story. That way they get a chance to experience the playroom, manipulate the objects. Parents and kids get a chance to see how I work and get comfortable with me. And after that first time, I may or may not go back and use the sand tray more, or I may say to a child, you know, you can do whatever you want in the playroom. You can do something you like in art, or you can make more sand stories. Sometimes I might ask you to do something special, but most of the time you can do whatever you want. And that combination of talking and staying in the concrete world, having a treatment plan, if you will, that they can take out during the talking time, they can take it out into their real life. That combination with the play time, where with a safe person, hopefully I'll become that to the child, and a comfortable environment, the child relaxes and goes into deep play. That combination seems to help the child evolve through whatever difficulties he or she may have.
Now, if the child is in high school or maybe even college, mm-hmm. are they, what kinds of things in the play area would they be making use of this in?
That's a great question. So I always say to the older kids, please excuse the fact I don't have a really sophisticated room for you. You're going to see a lot of things around here that represent things for younger children, even in my talking room, because I invite kids to draw if they want or build with blocks while they talk and listen. The pictures are all over the wall, so it clearly looks like a place that younger children have been involved in. So I say to the older child, have to forgive the fact that I don't have a more sophisticated space for you. And we can do talking in the talking room the whole session. If you like, that's fine with me. However, if you'd like to go in the playroom and do some art while we talk, or even create some stories in the sand while we talk, that's okay with me. You can kind of tell me how you feel about that. So I would say that most of the teens choose something in the playroom, because hardly anybody, this is probably true of adults too, wants to sit in a chair for an hour and talk, straight talk. And they seem much more relaxed and comfortable if they're drawing. And I get a lot out of it too, because there's a lot I can get, although I'm not an art therapist, from what they're drawing or what they're creating with clay, and certainly with whatever stories they're creating in the sand.
Okay. Now,
I'm sorry. What do you get out of, you know, if somebody's drawing something, you know, say like family, and they're drawing like, you know, mom and dad and the brother or sister or whatever. Mm-hmm. What do you get out of that? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know.
Mm-hmm. Since I'm not doing a formal interpretation as an art therapist, but I have been trained in what to look for, what I'm looking for is completion. Obviously, if it's a very young child, there's a
right.
wide degree of latitude about what's there. But in an older child, I'm looking for what members of the family were excluded, what members were included. Are all the arms and legs there? Do the arms have hands? Do the legs have feet? What's in the head? Does everybody have an eye or eyes, a mouth, nose, and ears? And are they clothed? How complete is the picture? Starting with the elements, the people who are there, and then how they're colored in. And what is the setting? And what did the child or young person, what kind of mood did that person seem to be in creating the picture? Relaxed, comfortable, or stressed, or uncertain? That kind of thing.
Okay. That's interesting.
Okay. Now, I know that sometimes you have private visits with the parents. Does that, is the child playing in the other room, or does the child stay home for the private visits?
Yeah, the child stays home, and I'm really clear with parents about that. It's an impossibility to have a really coherent, focused event with the parent if the child is in the other room. Firstly, even if the child is older, there's a sense of anxiety that exists. What are they talking about? They're
sure.
talking about me, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really critical, even if we have to wait a while for parents to make that arrangement, that it's a one-on-one time. I also always have time with parents and children in that beginning talking time, but the one-on-one time
mm-hmm.
is always without the child present.
Now, I think you, the information you sent me, you said you do that every third visit or so?
Just about.
Okay.
Every third visit.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And we could do it more frequently, or sometimes it ends up being less frequently because of busy lives. But that's a time when we reassess how things are going, how are the parents feeling about the whole situation here, are they comfortable with what's happening, what are their questions, what's their input, what do they feel is not a good situation that's continuing, and how else would they like me to be involved with their child? Would they like me to be speaking with the teacher, going in for meetings? Shall we collaborate on an evaluation, maybe a psychological evaluation, which I don't do, but I refer out for, or maybe bring in an occupational therapist to do a sensory evaluation, because the speaking about languaging out through behaviors, oftentimes kids have a sensory need that's very off. In other words, it's not being met. They need to have certain sensory adjustments in their environment, and once that happens, they oftentimes have a much easier time of it.
Could you be a little more specific when you talk about a sensory adjustment? What do you mean?
So some of us in life are very sensitive to sounds. Noise can be extremely jarring. It can prohibit kids from being able to listen in school. A lot of activity around, a lot of bodies around can be very distracting to children. The feel of clothing on the body, well, you or I might put on something from Target without any problem. There are a lot of kids that have difficulty with either a tag, you know, those little things that are inside our neck areas.
Right. Yes. The ones I cut off all the time.
Yeah, there. You have difficulty. You understand. But the degree of difficulty could be so disruptive that it really affects the child's behavior. The feel of something, sometimes a rough feel is very calming, sometimes a soft feel of objects being rubbed on the skin. The inside of the mouth can be stimulated with cotton swab, and that can be very relaxing. Really interesting things that we may not think of at all. Some children get very anxious, and it really helps them to be wrapped like a burrito. That's what I call
like
it.
Like swaddling the baby, I guess.
Yes, exactly right. Like that. But for the older child, either the grade school child or into the teen years, who is it? You'll know instantly the really well-known autistic, Temple Grandin, devised, do you know who I'm talking about?
I guess I don't. Do you?
Oh, that's okay. Temple Grandin is a pretty well-known autistic. What did you say, Larry?
I didn't say anything.
Okay. Autistic woman who redesigned all the stockyards across the United States so that cattle would go to become our hamburgers in a much less agitated fashion. And the way she convinced people to do this was in telling the owners that, and this is true, that the cattle excreted a certain enzyme that made the meat taste bad. Zip, they redesigned the stockyard so that her distress was that the cattle were very anxious.
Right.
But the important thing for our discussion is that Temple Grandin couldn't bear to be touched, but she needed pressure on her body to relax, so she invented a hug machine.
Wow.
And there are some children like this. They don't want personal hugs, but they really benefit from the burrito wrap.
So what does a hug machine look like? That's different from a burrito wrap, correct?
It definitely is a little more sophisticated and costs a little more money. I think it looks something like one of the old linen presses, or a little bit like an MRI.
Okay.
So, but they're still being touched.
Well, they're being hugged by the machine.
They're still being touched.
Yeah, but they're not being touched by
a
human
being.
No, no person is involved.
Right.
Okay.
That you set it for a certain hug ratio, and the machine hugs you because Temple said, I really like that feeling.
Oh, how interesting.
And she was a good friend of Oliver Sacks,
okay.
who did a lot of talking with Temple to try to understand her point of view
on
things, and that was one of them. So, no, nobody touches you, and that's the important point.
Uh-huh.
You're not being touched by a person, which might seem strange to those of us that aren't autistic, but it can be very unhappy mm-hmm. and anxiety-provoking for autistic people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's for the life of me, I can't think of his name, but he's a television star, and he hosts these different shows, and he won't shake hands.
Oh, I know.
You know who I mean?
Yeah, I do know.
He does the fist thing, mm-hmm. but he won't shake hands, mm-hmm. and he's got some kind of a issue, you know,
mm-hmm.
and but he went on with his life and became, you know, pretty famous and wealthy,
mm-hmm.
you know. But it's just, you know, quick question.
We all have, if we can think of it, we all have different quirky things. But going back to the kids, oftentimes the quirky things are not something that kids can really, they're not really articulate about them because they don't know exactly what they are. And so they're languaging out through behaviors that the adults around them consider disruptive. And so if we can lend a good listening ear to the child, one of my favorite phrases with children is, tell me more. Would you tell me more about that? I'd really like to understand that.
Hmm.
Sometimes kids get irritated with me because they think I should understand things a lot more quickly, and I agree with them. I say, you're probably right. It takes me longer sometimes. So I'm always trying to mirror out expressions that deal with normalizing having a tough time, but in a real way, which isn't too hard to do because it does take me longer sometimes. But it helps kids tell their story, and usually they will tell their story if they feel that I'm a good listener.
Right.
Well, if developed a, almost like a relationship with you.
They do.
They feel like they can trust you and, you know.
Yes, and that's integral to the success of any therapy, but especially play therapy, because the whole situation depends on a comfortable environment with a neutral, skilled person helping you talk and play through a situation that will connect you more deeply to what's going on inside of you.
Quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever discovered with your play therapy a child who was battered or misused or, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And how did that, you know, just how did that come about? If the, by what they were drawing or
mm-hmm.
doing in the sand or...
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good question. Sometimes one parent will bring the child in with suspicions or concerns. But if that hasn't happened and there's no reporting in, generally the child has kind of a emotional set that's pretty anxious and guarded. And in the playroom, we'll construct some sort of anxious sand tray story or develop a story in the dollhouse that tells me that. One time a very young child came in and for four sessions in a row decided to do a sand story. He was about four. And each sand story he set up had multiple bottles of liquor. Now I have little miniatures of Coke. Wine, that kind of thing, in the playroom. But he had this covering the table at lunch or breakfast. And the third time he did it, and I don't say, oh, is there a problem here? I just say, wow, that's a lot to drink. Do you want to tell me a little bit about that? And he said, the daddy is drinking a lot. Drinking a lot. And so I helped the child construct the story. So in that case, I brought the mother in, and we actually discovered that the father, who was taking care of the children during the daytime, there was a baby involved, was drunk all day long. And so we helped him get diagnosed for his alcoholism. We helped him get help. But the other is true also about the kids revealing. They might reveal a situation where one doll is either beating up the other or yelling at the other, or if I really can see some sort of elements of that going on, I might say, could you point to where that doll has an ouchie? Would you do that for me, or would you rather draw it? And usually the child does it in other than self. In other words, not saying I, but other than self.
Okay.
But that's always indicative of something's not right going on. And so I will bring a parent in. And I am a mandated reporter. So I make it quite clear to them that I have to report. And that means calling up Childline. And I always work with the family, not directly with Childline. I can't do that. I'm not allowed to do that. But I always try to work in a collaborative way to get, first of all, to get the child safe.
Right.
And then to try to work with the family to get help to the family.
Is every therapist mandated?
Yes.
Uh-huh. That's what I thought. Okay.
I think maybe Larry can help with the list. Most people in professional life, like firemen, policemen, teachers, therapists. Can you think of anybody else? Doctors?
Teachers, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that about covers it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's
now, any of us can report with the anonymity.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But, of course, if I'm seeing a child,
I've
already followed the anonymity, and I think it's important to be really clear with the parent.
Right. Understand.
And that's got to be a tough decision, too.
Well, it's a tough situation. It's never a tough decision. Well, it's a tough decision because you're not always sure, because this is a child.
Right.
And it's hard for children to tell, but there are very, very well-skilled and experienced evaluators. Now, I have a lot of experience in dealing with children who've been sexually abused, but there are people much more skilled than I, including doctors with specific skill experience in looking at genitalia of children who have been abused. That is not in most doctors' training, so it's critical that that one is sought out, one that is experienced and trained in that. So it's not difficult once I feel there is a strong suspicion. The tricky part is trying to produce the most effective kind of result with all the people involved, because obviously you want people to get help, you want to protect people. It's hard for one parent to blow the whistle on the other. Maybe it's a grandfather. Maybe it's second generation, and then the parent feels very guilty. I never thought he would do it to my child. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. Down the line, I never thought my father would do that to my child. And most people think that even if they know someone has violated them years ago, they think they can be hypervigilant and prevent it happening.
You know, it just... I know someone who at one point was very close to, and he wound up for over a couple of years violating his granddaughter and is now in jail.
Oh, dear.
But it's just what effect that must have on the child. And, you know, psychologically, you know, mentally, and, you know, the whole nine yards. And also, if it's the grandfather, like you said, in this case it was, the other children, you know, the sons, the daughters, whatever, you know, it's got to have, it just pretty much, I don't know, destroys the family.
It's really a lifelong effect, and it's really important that a spotlight be shown on that and help be gotten in as soon as possible. But kids feel responsible for any kind of behaviors in adults. It's just the way kids think.
Mm-hmm.
And so they feel guilty. They feel embarrassed and ashamed. They feel scared. Oftentimes they've been threatened. Don't tell or I'll kill your mother. And boys in particular worry about if they are not gay and they are afraid that people will think they're gay.
Right.
Because they've been violated by a man. They worry about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's an additional worry. And at Women's Crisis Service, I facilitated groups of women. Don't think we ever had, during my tenure there, a man. And we, they were support groups for women. And I followed up on a couple of those women over the years, over the 25 years since I've been there. And it's been an incredible journey for them. But with help with these particular women, with telling their story and getting support and help, they've been able to have very full lives. But it doesn't leave them.
No.
Right.
No.
All right. I'm going to switch to a more some closure here on a little more upbeat note.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm going to talk about two things. How parents can help their children at home. I know you have some kind of a prize box.
Yeah.
And how you can sort of progress toward what you call graduation with the children.
Mm-hmm. I try to encourage parents to create special playtimes with their children on a normative basis, even 10 or 15 minutes a day, because most of us feel we don't have time. I have a dartboard in my talking room that oftentimes the kids have a five-minute game with the parent before they leave. And I say, this kind of thing you can do with your child every night only takes 5 or 10 minutes. It's physically active, it's fun because it's a little bit of competition, and it's cooperation and collaboration. And if you label it a special playtime, and then when the timer gets set and goes off, you say, I can't wait until the next playtime. That's very important. And then also the kids can earn credits either through stars or tickets on their index cards with their strategy work for the week. You know, for effort at first in the beginning weeks, effort is really rewarded, and then with outcome. And then they can cash that in for extra play times with parents or special events. I try to discourage buying toys. Now, my prize box, kids get in at the end of every session, if they've talked and listened in the playroom, I mean in the talking room, and if they've, I always say this and they laugh, if they come into the playroom and they leave, that leaving is very important, and they get to go in a prize box, which is a few items that are very inexpensive or from thrift shops or given to me by other parents, and they get to choose one. And they're always non-techie, non-screen, having to do with reading or games.
Right, not candy.
Oh, not candy. And graduation is, I always tell kids that I really, really like you coming here, but you don't want to come here forever. And when you're ready, when you're feeling happier and you're able to do some things that help you be happier, we can sit down and talk about you graduating. We're going to do up a diploma. We're going to work on that together of all the things that you do that have helped you feel better about whatever you weren't feeling good about before, and we're going to have good things to eat. And then you can go home. And I'll always want to hear from you. And sometimes kids like to come by to say hi, or they want to come in for a tune-up, and that's okay, too.
When you're dealing with adults, what are some of the issues that you deal with? Well, yeah, like when you have, say, a couple comes to you or an individual comes to you.
Feeling unhappy, maybe on the verge of depression. We talk that out and figure out whether any kind of chemical help, medication might be necessary. Frustrated with job, with not feeling they're getting where they need to go, either personally or with a partner. Sometimes one of them is the victim of verbal abuse. Sometimes they're dealing with a medical problem that they haven't really researched, and we work on that. Sometimes they're dealing with impending or maybe recent grief. Since I worked in hospice, I often work with families dealing with the terminal illness of one of their members, or maybe they're going through mourning. And I can always refer to support groups for that, as well as work with kids and adults individually.
Okay.
I wanted to ask you, do you have a program at Hunterdon Medical Center that deals with that? We have a program nearby.
For grieving?
Yeah.
I believe we do, don't we, Larry?
Yeah, I believe there is.
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
I think there's more than one type of program.
We have a
one
lot
for children.
Of here.
Yeah.
You said, well, you didn't say, but in your little bio here, that you use mindfulness in your practice. And it's for both children and adults.
Yes.
You want to explain a little bit what your use of mindfulness is?
Sure. Everybody's stressed.
Really?
Yeah. And so one of my colleagues that has a mindfulness practice is very emphatic about this. The adult needs to practice the relaxation techniques of mindfulness, even if it's 5 minutes a day, and embrace them before the adult can expect that the child will be willing to do this. And it can be something as simple as stopping, taking some deep breaths, letting whatever is flowing through your mind flow through, and just being present in the moment. And there are loads of ways to do that, lots of wonderful exercises to do with children too. And that's what I try to emphasize. Do it with your child. There are wonderful apps on your smartphone, with music, with lovely sounds, with talking. And if you establish the practice, your child's mind will actually form in a way that it will always seek a more peaceful situation instead of the rest of our minds. They're constantly churning. What didn't I do? What do I need to do? So it's more for, I think, with a lot of, I never know whether to say us or we. A lot of us who are adults, we are always needing to come down from that fretful, stressful place. But children will automatically go to it if they learn early enough. And doing it as babies, if a parent could do this with their child, their newborn infant, and put down the cell phone, maintain eye contact, and have that back and forth kind of dynamic going on, deep breathing and just being quiet, even a dinner together can turn into that kind of situation at home. But a mindfulness experience is something that I help kids and adults have at the beginning of every one of my sessions, and I ask them to work on it at home. And what do you suppose most people say to me most times?
I can't meditate.
I don't have time.
I don't have time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I say I really understand. And that's why in those moments that everybody's stressing about the next test, if you're a kid, or, you know, how you're going to do what you have to do the next day. Those are the moments to take five and do this. And it really, I'm doing it myself. I think for about 2 years I've gone to a drop-in weekly mindfulness meditation session, and I know I'm a very high-geared, stressed-out person, and it's made a major difference in my life. Even sitting here now, being kind of a little nervous, I'm taking some deep breaths, and it makes a big difference.
I'm going to ask a question about that because I'm curious. You're not talking about yoga. You're talking about a drop-in mindfulness session. How long does that last?
Well, it's an hour, and it's a combination in the session I go to of some discussion about maybe self-compassion. We're working on self-compassion now, for example, and there might be some readings from that. Just before we have the readings, we have a very minimal, maybe 5-minute relaxation, starts with the bell, and our facilitator talks us through it, ends with the bell, and then we have the discussion, and then we go into a deeper 20 to 25 minute relaxation that's also guided, might be guided from an app, or it might be the facilitator herself doing it.
I got to tell you, I'm not sure if it was last week or a couple weeks ago. I had two young men on, and that's what they did, mindfulness.
Oh, yes?
Yeah. And, you know, it's very interesting, you know, because they, like the one man was saying, people just come in and just, you know, sit down and breathe and, you know, relax. And then, you know, there's those stuff I can't pronounce, like Chong and
Qigong.
Qigong and stuff like that, other guy did. And it was just very interesting, you know. And I know for a fact, not to bore you with my thing, but after hearing and watching the Las Vegas shooting, I was very upset. And, yeah, I'm a vet and all that jazz, but it just, you know, it just bothered me so much. And I don't normally go to mindfulness things, but having recently had them on, I went out on my back deck and sat on the chair, and we live in the woods, and just listening to the peace and, you know, the birds and watching the squirrels and stuff like that, it just helped, you know, getting away. You know what I mean? It was just like relaxing, you know.
It's powerful. And October 25th, a guy, his name, David Gelles, G-E-L-L-E-S, wrote a wonderful article for The Times on mindfulness for children, a really nice summary. And really focused, too, on how we adults really need to be doing it so that we're modeling it.
That's great.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's great.
We only have a couple minutes left. How do people pay for your services? Do you accept insurance or?
No, I don't work with insurance, although I will help people get reimbursed.
Okay.
I have a specific fee, and then I have a sliding scale fee.
Okay.
And I always say to people, if the sliding scale fee still represents difficulty for you, we'll talk, because I never turn anybody away.
Okay. And the next question, that's good to know, thank you. The next question is, how do people get in touch with you?
You mean personally now?
No,
you
yes.
Want my number?
Well, no, like, you know, if some, well, yeah.
Yes. How do I get referrals?
How do you get referrals? And if somebody wants to,
contact
wants to contact you, how would they go about doing it? Is there a Facebook page they go to, or?
No, I think probably my email or cell phone is a good way. I don't do Facebook.
Okay.
Neither do I. But through former or current clients and through other professionals.
Okay.
So why don't we give out your email address and whichever phone number you prefer?
Sure. my email address is my name, Denny Whalen, DennyWhalen, at yahoo.com.
Okay.
And my, probably give you my office phone, 215-653-0738.
Let's repeat that, too. Okay.
Shall I repeat it?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. So the email is Denny Whalen, DennyWhalen at yahoo.com. And the office phone is 215-653-0738. And I'm in the Philadelphia area.
All righty. Okay. Is there anything in the last minute or so that you'd like to add that we didn't cover that's important?
I think so huge for me, and kids have taught me this, is acknowledgement. When a child tells us something, to acknowledge and to believe. So, gosh, Tim, that you just told me something that's really scaring you. That sounds really big. Can you tell me more about that? And then when he tells, say, I believe you, that that's really hard for you. A lot of times we rush in there to help with an idea, but
yes,
we haven't really listened enough and acknowledged to the child.
And they need that. They need that to move on then.
Yeah, I think we all do.
Uh-huh, sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't thank you enough, Denny, for coming on.
Yes, thank
And
you,
I will
Denny.
Tell you this, we're going to have you back in the future.
Oh, thank you. It's been just very nice to be a part of your program. I thank you.
And well, we thank you for all the work you do and all the people you help.
Yes.
Oh, I really love it.
Yes. And it's great that you're so passionate about it.
And we will have you back again.
Okay.
Well, that's lovely.
We
all
do
right.
promise.
Bye. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye
now.
And remember, mental health matters. We'll see you again next week, same time, same station.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
You're listening.